I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears in rain. Time to die.
Welcome to Jim's Movies and Junk. I'm Notorious J.I.M.
And I'm Julian.
And it's finally happened. It's finally happened. Today's episode is going to be solely about Blade Runner. Now, we've discussed this movie countless times. We actually brought this movie countless times and compared other movies to this film. But we've never really talked about the film itself. So, let's get into it. I want to point out that I discovered Blade Runner way later on. I didn't see it when I was younger. As you saw it when you were younger.
Yeah.
And you were into it immediately. Where I had no idea what it was about. I just knew it was a cult film. I knew it was a very nerdy film. It was around the time I actually discovered Star Wars. I realized, wow, what else have I been missing out on? And that's why I got into Blade Runner. But then around that time, I think the ultimate, well, not the ultimate cut, but the
Final Cut
was actually out. And that's like the only version of it I'd actually truly seen. I seen a little bit of the original. I know it's totally different from what it seems like. And, you know, I have all the cuts. So I just haven't watched all the cuts of it.
You got the big box set?
Well, yeah, I got the little, well, before, not the really, not the big box set, but the...
Not the case, the VoIP case comp. And
all, but it's the version with the release, all the versions of it together in just one pack. So it didn't come with all the additional stuff. And but I got the films, so that's all that really matters to me.
What's cool is the final cut has a DVD that comes along with it, or Blu-ray, where it's an hour long, maybe an hour plus documentary about the making of Blade Runner.
Which I looked into. I seen it. Harrison Ford wasn't really happy making the film.
He was happy making the film. It was, we'll get into it a little later. There's other things that they made him do that he wasn't happy with.
Yeah. So it was a situation of, it was just a lot of stuff going on with the film. Like the filming of it, and for a long time, I never thought they'd ever make another sequel. I mean, I never thought they'd make a sequel at all, basically. And I'm not sure if it's ever happening. They said they're gonna do it, but with Tony Scott dying, I know they already canceled Top Gun, but I wonder if that's gonna affect Blade Runner at all.
Well, wasn't it Ridley Scott who directed it?
Well, Ridley Scott did direct it, but you know, with his brother passing away. But actually, to be honest, I think he did lose a brother, another brother, didn't he? Around the time that he was filming Blade Runner.
I don't
know. Or a little before going... Well, I do remember Ridley Scott lost a family member around the time he was actually going to filming Blade Runner. It really did affect him tremendously. And a lot of people said the artwork from it... Well, not the artwork, but the look of the film for him was inspired by Metropolis, which is funny to me because he was inspired by Metropolis and a lot of people are inspired by Blade Runner now.
Well, the whole thing is...
kind of like his inspiration from Metropolis. But... from what I hear, he was going through a tough time of grieving when he did the film. And he wanted to express all that emotion and all that you know, all that feel into this film.
So he wanted you to know that feel, bro?
He wanted you to know that feel, bro. So he put a lot of that into this film.
Okay, I guess we should start off by saying we're going to go through the entire movie of Blade Runner. If you haven't seen it, you might not want to listen to this right away. Go watch it. Because we're going to ruin the ending and the multiple endings that were involved.
Only do the main. Well, I guess like the final ending.
Yeah, the final cut ending.
Final cut ending.
If you don't give a shit, you'll probably learn a lot about Blade Runner in this next hour. That you probably would never know and don't really need to know. But it's very interesting trivia nonetheless.
But remember, what's been learned cannot be unlearned.
Dun dun dun. So let's get to it.
The very first thing you see is a replicant being tested if he actually is a replicant.
It's Leon, I believe.
Yeah, Leon is being tested to see if he actually is a replicant. And it starts off with the machine showing that he may be, because the question they're asking about the TARDIS, if you remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
You see a tortoise laying on its back. You don't help him. Why?
He's like, I don't understand. Makes no sense. Like, just to analyze that, what do you think the purpose was for that question? To show if he had any kind of human compassion?
I believe the Voight contest, in general, is just to kind of, like... Later on, Deckard is gonna, like, administer the test to Rachel.
Yeah.
Who's a further along, like, more well-produced replica.
Yeah, more advanced replica.
And he says it takes him more questions than it would a normal replicant to find out she's a fake.
Yeah.
And I think it's more of, like, they're going to ask you a series of questions that a normal person would kind of answer, maybe, like, respond, kind of like, what is that supposed to mean? Like, you're supposed to have an emotion to it.
So you don't think it's really, you're not supposed to really answer it. You're supposed to have just an emotional response to it. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah, it's kind of like the way, like, a cop would interrogate somebody. They'll, like, throw questions at you that you can answer normally, then kind of throw a tough question at you to see how you respond, then go back to normal questions.
Yeah.
It's gauging response. And if you have a very awkward response, the way Leon is about to, by shooting the guy administering the test.
Awkward.
then, you know, you're probably a fucking replicant. Or, in the book, as they were called, skin jobs.
Yeah. Right here, actually, when he shoots them, it's more brutal in the final cut than it was in the original.
Maybe. I can't remember the other cuts too well. I will say that we're going to go off of the final cut for the most of this.
Yeah, we're actually going to do that.
And, like, when I can remember something, I'll throw it in. I believe the theatrical cut starts off with Deckard at the noodle shop, and not with that test.
No, because it starts off, if I remember, it starts off a long period. They had to cut it down kind of as well for the final cut. But it starts off a long period of him just standing out in the rain for the add in the voiceover.
Yeah.
And then he eventually goes over, you know, to the noodle stand.
And the thing we're talking about with Harrison Ford not liking the movie was he hated recording that voiceover.
But they forced him to do it. I mean, they actually brought him in after he has already finished the film. To do it, because that idea that they may do it, they may not. A lot of the shots were extended just because, you know. But the final cut for it, the theatrical version of it, wasn't what the director wanted.
Yeah.
So Ridley Scott didn't actually sign off on that. And they actually brought Harrison Ford in after he already moved on to another project to do the voiceover, which he hated so much. You kind of hear it in his voice.
Well, he even says in the documentary that he purposefully did a bad job recording it, hoping they wouldn't use it. But they did anyways.
Yeah.
I'll get to it in the final scene. You could really tell. You could really hear it in his voice.
Yeah.
But,
which also adds in, they felt the need to overly explain the film.
Which, I can see how they would. We're gonna also get into things that sort of don't make any sense unless you know the world very well.
Yeah.
So, we start off, Leon's getting the Voight Kampf test by a Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Shoots him, gets away. So, Gaff, a person who's, like, currently working with the police department, I believe. Isn't he a Blade Runner himself?
Yes, I guess. They don't really clarify. I think he is just to be with the police department. He has a badge and all.
Yeah.
So, he has to be with law enforcement to some
degree.
Yeah, some degree.
So, Gaff, who, believe it or not, like, he has, like, different colored eyes?
Yeah, it's contacts. You can actually tell more in the Blu-ray version of it. It's very, very obvious.
Yeah, and he's speaking, like, a number of different dialects. He's speaking, like, Hungarian or something like that.
I heard Hungarian mixed with Latin. And
it's a lot of different dialects. His, Edward James almost said that he tried to make up a language that the future would, like, they would speak in this future.
Yeah.
Because as we see with the world, there's, like, geisha advertising and a lot of, like, Asian influence everywhere.
Yeah, which I think plays to the point of, you know, I guess you could say Japan and, you know, basically Japan bringing in, like, shipping in some of their products and the idea of how Japan's so weird at that time period compared to us. And
it came from the idea of the 80s when this came out of, like, everything's coming from Japan. All their technology is there. You know, places like China have more money than us.
Yeah,
so you know, eventually they're going to buy us out and we're going to have to all learn Chinese or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Firefly went on to kind of have that idea as well.
Yeah.
So what Edward James Olmos did was he invented that language himself of a lot of different dialects, you know, all rolled into one.
Do you remember what you said? I forgot what it was. He does say something and translates the holy pig shit, you're a motherfucker, or something like that.
It's, yeah, he's just talking shit to him.
Yeah, it's something really weird. Did like the Asian guy stuff in. He said, you are Blade Runner.
Yeah. Two and two. What? It's what he's ordering, 4 bowls of noodles.
Yeah.
And he's trying to explain two and two.
Yeah.
And he just gives him like two. And he's like, whatever. So Gaff has to go get Deckard, a former Blade Runner who is retired.
Yeah.
Who's kind of become disenfranchised with the whole retiring replicant. Or, you know, killing replicants. They call it retiring.
Yeah.
And they have to go get him out of, like, decommissioned because he was the best. And they have the Nexus 6. 6 people who found their way onto Earth.
Yeah. From a different planet, right? Because they were mining on a different... Was it Mars?
I think it was Mars. They were mining somewhere.
They were mining on Mars. And they came over to... I don't want to say America. They came over to the United Planet of America.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they have to be hunted down.
And, like, the idea of the Nexus 6, at least in the book, was that, like, each person kind of did their own thing. Leon was, like, a worker. Like, he was, like, a miner.
Yeah.
Roy Batty was supposed to be sort of, like, a security guy.
Mm-hmm.
Pris was supposed to be, like, a pleasure bot.
Yeah, she was.
And then, they don't talk about it, but there's 2 other people.
Well, they do actually kind of mention it, where they're showing off,
They show their files.
They show their files, and they mention that as they're showing Deckard their files.
But there was another one or two who already came to Earth and who were retired before Deckard gets involved. Yeah. They say one of them was trying to break into the Tyrell Corporation.
Yeah.
And was retired. And in the book, they say another one fell into, like, some sort of security lines and got electrocuted to death.
Yeah, they got electrocuted trying to escape, I think, from... For like a gate,
something like that.
Yeah, but basically they got rid of 2. They were actually in the book, right?
Yeah.
If I remember, they found a way to get rid of them, but still mention them in the film.
So, their model is Nexus 6.
Yeah.
But there's also 6 of them. You know, yeah. And the stripper, I forgot her name.
I forgot about her.
Zora, is her name. She's the stripper. So we have those 4, plus the 2 that have died already.
Yeah.
And it's up to Deckard, who they recently got, you know, buying noodles, to come out of retirement and hunt them down.
All right.
And this scene is kind of like where we first get our real good glimpse of the world. We get the spinner, the car that they fly away in.
Yeah.
And we get to see the skyline. We get to see the blimps, which is kind of weird that they would still have blimps in the future.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I like, it's like the design of the world is just amazing. It is. And even though it blends in a lot of old with futuristic new.
Like also the work they did with the model works and shit like that.
Yeah, to this very day it stands up. Stands out perfectly to this very day. You pop in the Final Cut and it just still blows your mind. I guess they touched it up a little.
They did. They went back and filmed some scenes that I'll mention later.
Oh, yeah.
And when they leave on the spinner, we kind of get an idea of like the world they're going to build. As we go through the film, you'll notice that it rains a lot more. That the atmosphere is kind of not the way it should be. People walk around with a lot of like raincoats and shit.
Yeah, and umbrellas.
Even though it's not raining, kind of like how they know it's going to anytime soon.
Yeah.
In the book, they say that there was like a nuclear war or some sort of war going on. To where there was like a fallout or something like really changed the environment because of this war. In the book, they wear cod pieces.
Yeah.
Because you'll go sterile. Just like being out and about in the world. And they don't necessarily say this in the movie, but you kind of get the idea with the way the weather is, the way the city's kind of covered in a fog when you get out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You literally have to raise out of a fog.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, just the look of it is amazing. They also used the concept of it for RoboCop. Total Recall. 2099, or that may have to get comic books with 2099.
Yeah, I think that's a comic book thing. Spider-Man 2099?
Punisher 2099. No, it was Total Recall with X amount of, like, a 2 with a bunch of zeros or whatever behind it. Can't remember the name of the show exactly, 2072 or whatever. But it was a Total Recall show. that blended in Total Recall with Blade Runner.
So they get Deckard out of commission. They take him to the police station, or the police headquarters. I'm not sure which one you want to use.
HQ.
Sure. And they show him the video of Leon being administered the Voight-Kampff test. You know, the Blade Runner there being murdered. They kind of let him know, hey, these guys, the Nexus 6 models, are here on Earth. We need you to come out of retirement. And to, like, you know, basically find him and kill him, or retire them, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
We see Gaff make a little stick figure man with a boner. Yeah. Which is only in the final cut.
Yeah, because you don't see it, but it does explain that he does do that.
Yeah, you know, it's going to set up something later in the final cut, which isn't in the... Because the other cuts, the theatrical cut, the director's cut, the work print...
Yeah.
And then we have the final cut, which is the one I watch the most. I'm sure it's the one you've seen the most.
Yeah, it's the one I've seen.
And, you know, the one we're going to be telling you now.
Yeah.
So, Deckard finds out about, you know, the other Blade Runner, Holden is his name.
Yeah.
Who dies. He is kind of doesn't want to get back into the job, but they kind of convince him to. They give him one of the world's most badass guns.
Oh, yeah. I've been trying to buy it off of Amazon for a while now.
Do they have replicants of that?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, man.
That is a Trigun gun, but off subject.
Yeah. If you want to see, Adam Savage has a whole, like, 30-minute video on YouTube about how he was making replicants of the Blade Runner gun. And yes, I'm using replicants, ironically. And it's cool. It's cool to see all the different kind of guns and the different models that people have been trying to make.
Yeah.
And I guess we can explain the gun a bit. It's like, they say that part of it is taken from an assault rifle.
Yeah.
Like, well, not an assault rifle. It's an old-timey, like, bolt-action rifle.
Yeah.
Which is why on the side of it, you can see the bolt.
Yeah.
The trigger guard is, like, extra extra big because it's got two triggers on it.
Yeah. Which I didn't notice that at first.
Really?
Yeah. Like, watching the movie, I didn't notice it. It wasn't until I was actually looking up the gun that I noticed it.
Did you ever notice the light it has on it to tell you when you're out of ammo for some reason?
Yeah.
It has a light on it that runs green, and when you shoot it, it turns red.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fucking... It's got all kinds of cool shit on it.
Yeah, I never noticed that. I mean, it's just an amazing gun.
That you hardly ever see, like...
Yeah, he doesn't... He hardly uses it.
Like, he even gets... Well, we'll get into it, but... He's not very good with a gun, we'll say.
Well, he's decent. Maybe... Well, yeah, we get into that. Basically, we're going in continuity of the movie, so...
Yeah, of the final cut we're going in order.
So I can't just jump ahead to like, remember this.
Yeah.
All right.
So, after he gets caught up on the Nexus 6, he goes to the Tyrell Corporation.
Yeah.
And speaks to, I believe, Tyrell, like, himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He speaks to himself. And you have a feel of what they're doing. And then he introduces him to...
Rachel.
Rachel, who he doesn't know is a replicant. As he interviews her, he starts to figure out that she is. And then he talks to Tyrell afterwards. And finds out that, you know, it's a different model. It's kind of the model he's going after.
It's a new... Well, she's a new model. She's a more advanced model than the Nexus 6. Model, yeah.
Well, she's not even aware that she's a replicant.
Yeah. And before that even happens, because she's introduced as his assistant.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that idea of, like, you know, you think you're so cool, Blade Runner. Why don't you give her the test? And, you know, see if the Voight-Kampff is still, like... You know, a viable way of finding replicants.
Yeah.
In the final cut, they have a scene where they're looking at an owl.
Yeah.
You remember that? Where they're looking at the owl, and the owl has like a weird sheen to his eyes.
Yeah.
That's kind of taken from the book, where in the future, all the animals have died. Almost all the animals have died, I'll say.
Yeah.
And it's a big status thing to kind of have a live animal.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like now how you would wear... You know, like gold and shit. You would kind of like have a flashy car.
Yeah.
You know, having a real animal is that day and age is, you know, I got a lot of cash on me because I can afford a real animal. I mean, it's never really brought up in the movie. It kind of...
They kind of touch on the fact that animals aren't around anymore as much. Like, through realize that some of these animals are mechanical.
Yeah, in the book...
But, yeah, they never did actually explain it.
In the book, Deckard owns a mechanical sheep that he's trying to, like, pass off as real.
And that's right, he does. Because he goes out and takes care of it. I actually thought it was real. They do reveal that it's not real, right?
Yeah. When his neighbor, I think his neighbor finds out.
Yeah.
And he tells his neighbor, well, you got a fake ass animal too.
Yeah.
And it's not really touched on in the movie. It's just an interesting thing if you're watching the final cut. That's why that scene is in there.
Yeah, it would also explain certain little things later on. Especially in the owl's eyes. It explains how, I guess you could say, replicants' eyes change in a certain light.
Yeah, they have a weird sheen to it.
Yeah, which, well, I don't know if you noticed this, but there is, well, I guess I could drop this out, but I don't know if you noticed or not. There is one scene in which Dicker's eyes change.
Yeah, it has a sheen to it.
Yeah, you know, Ridley Scott would actually say, he said that it was just the lighting.
Yeah, he says it was just on set they would do that.
Yeah.
I was going to get to a thing kind of hinting at that, because during the interview with Rachel, she says, have you ever retired a human by mistake?
Yeah.
And then she says, have you ever tried, or have you ever taken the Voight-Kampff test yourself?
Yeah.
And he kind of like brushes them both aside of like, you know, I've never thought about it. I never even bothered trying to give myself the Voight-Kampff.
Yeah.
And it's setting up things later on that you can kind of think about more.
Yeah, if you're actually paying attention and try to think about it. Because this movie actually does take a couple of viewings to catch some of the stuff you missed the first time.
And, there's a lot of shit going on in the background. Like, the whole thing we talked about with the Asian influence.
Yeah.
You'll see kids kind of riding bikes around with, like, the rice hats.
Yeah.
That Raiden-style hat from Mortal Kombat. Or the Big Trouble in Little China hats. Depending on what your reference might be.
Yeah, I caught it, you know, Raiden.
Yeah, I would have went with Raiden, too.
Yeah, Raiden's a far better. Remember, everybody thought Raiden... Well, I guess he was a form of Raiden in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, apparently Mortal Kombat took a lot of influence from that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. Like, even, what's his name? Lao Pang or something?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be Shang Tsung at the end of the first Mortal Kombat.
Wow.
And, yeah, there's all kinds of shit like that. But, but... At this time in the movie, he administers the Voight-Kampff, finds out Rachel's a replicant, doesn't tell her she's a replicant, and we move on to Roy Batty trying to find a way to get into the Tyrell Corporation.
Yeah.
So, our next scene, we see, was it J.F. Sebastian?
Yeah, J.F. Sebastian, and he's trying to help.
He's trying to help Pris.
Yeah, he's trying to help Pris, who's actually playing into the role. Of you know, needing help and her being human, and you know, playing up with a little bit of sex appeal and bringing in Roy Batty.
Mm-hmm. She's like hanging out in the trash when J.F. Sebastian comes home.
Yeah, because I think she's actually being kind of, she's kind of getting distressed, sort of in a way where she's playing on putting on the role. She's in distress.
In one of the cuts of the movie, you see her walk over there and like get in there, get in the trash and kind of cover herself.
Yeah.
It's that they're playing up the idea that she knew he was coming home.
Yeah.
So she sat there and waiting for him, and waited for him. I believe the final cut just cuts to her already there.
Yeah. I think that's what they intended to do, to actually kind of show you that she was there, but not really... Like, you know she's not doing any good.
Yeah.
But, you know, not to really just draw that home for you, I guess.
The theatrical cut really hammered it home a lot that... These are these people, and these are their intentions to do this and shit.
Yeah.
So, Pris meets J.F. Sebastian. They go up to his apartment. He tells her about how he makes toys and replicants, like, hits. He's, like, the guy behind making all the replicants. It's his technology that makes them run.
Yeah.
We also learn that J.F. Sebastian, who looks like he's 40-something years old...
Yeah, he's, like... 18 or something, or 20.
Yeah,
something.
He's actually, like, real young. He's got, like, progeria or something, where he ages a lot faster.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be, like, a parallel to the Nexus 6, who... I don't think we've said it yet. I was trying to, like, save it for later. But the reason they've come to Earth is that their model of replicant only lives for about...
Three years. Because they're designed that way. That's the downside to them. They're designed to look and feel as human as possible. But, you know, they have a expiration date.
Yeah, they have, like, a shelf life of 3 years. And it was sort of I think Tyrell says that it's sort of a fail-safe.
Yeah.
You know, in case they ever, like, try to uprise or do something. Because they are stronger and, like, you know, faster and better than a normal human.
Yeah, because they were intentionally made to die after 3 years because of that.
Yeah. So, we get like a parallel that J.F. Sebastian is also doesn't have a long time to live.
Yeah.
And, you know, he also would like to live a lot longer. And when Pris brings in Roy Batty to, like, kind of hang out with him, yeah, he, like, thinks he's making new friends and kind of understands a bit more that, you know, these people just want to live.
Yeah.
You know, the way he just kind of wants to live. But, you know, time is really catching up to your ass.
Yeah, really.
And I believe this is only in the final cut, this next scene. I don't remember. I think it might be in the regular cut, but Rachel comes to see Deckard. And she wants to know the results of the Voight-Kampff. You know, she wants to know if she's a replicant or not.
And he lies to her, right?
Yeah.
I remember that he does. He lies to her and tells her no.
And then he has a weird forced rape scene type shit going on.
Yeah, well, I think around that time, that's before the forced rape. That's where you actually see his eyes.
Within that
period. It's after, like, they're playing piano that he tries to force rape her.
Yeah.
Because Mozart brings up the rapist in you again. I don't know.
I guess because of the final cut, we should also mention that, because doesn't that happen before she shows up? He's sitting at the piano playing it, and he has dreams about the unicorn.
Yeah, that happens as well. Actually, it's disturbed by her coming.
Yeah. Not from the forced rape, but showing up at his house.
Showing up at his house, yeah.
wow. Well, I couldn't let it go. But apparently Ridley Scott filmed that. And he was telling the people he was with that the movie he did after that was Legend.
Yeah.
With Tom Cruise. And the idea behind Legend was these goblins cut off the horn of a unicorn, you know, so that they could take it to the darkness and he'll have all kinds of magic powers and shit.
Yeah.
He told the people he was with that he was filming, like, sort of test shots for Legend. And that's why they were doing this unicorn thing. Like, he didn't even tell the people he was working with that the idea of the unicorn was supposed to be for Blade Runner. Which is kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, keep it in the dark.
So, Deckard's dreaming of unicorns. Rachel shows up. He lies to her. They fucking have a weird, awkward sex scene.
Yeah, because he's kind of, like, grabs her and kisses her anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Does she slap him first and then he kissed her, or...
Yeah, and he kind of, like, force kisses her.
Yeah, force kisses her, force making out.
Yeah, like Vader, he used the force on her.
And she goes along with it. So he doesn't really, technically he doesn't rape her, but he forces a make-out session, which I guess leads to consensual sex.
Maybe, I don't know.
Probably, maybe she doesn't know she's a replicant.
So maybe he used, like, some code word. Like, he's like, red applesauce. And she's like, oh, man, I'm totally in the mood.
Yeah. Maybe she realized, okay, if I don't get into the mood, he's going to just do it anyway.
Oh, my God, cut that out. If I don't get into the mood, it's going to be dry anal for it.
Clearly, no means yes to him, right?
But.
Also, just throw it out there. Han Solo gets the girls, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even when he's a dick, he gets the girls.
I know.
Indiana Jones, I like that. Indiana Jones gets pussy thrown at him regardless, because he's an adventurer.
Yeah.
But Deckard gets told no, it takes it anyway.
He's a big Pepe Le Pew fan, you know? Sometimes you gotta just take the pussy like Pepe.
That was always a weird scene. And people I have showed the movie to, it's always a strange scene to show people.
Really? Am I supposed to like this dude?
Cause
it, like, does kind of have that, like, am I supposed to like Deckard? And they were right to cut it out of the kind of regular movie, the theatrical run.
Yeah, because I can see, like, the editor being like, this is kind of rapey.
Yeah.
Delete.
Can I edit around this, please?
Yeah, cut this out.
Put it in.
Cut it out.
So, Uncle Joey was in the editing room. So, around this time, we get Leon and Roy Batty go to Mr. Chu, I believe his name is.
Yeah, and had a little racist moment of having the eyes.
Oh, yeah, and fucking...
eyes and, like, buck teeth.
Yeah, that's pretty awful, isn't it?
Oh, man, what's going on?
Oh, man, we're back-to-back terrible moments of the movie. Because he's like, oh, so... And it's kind of like, I don't know about this. But it is more world building. You see that Mr. Chu is in kind of like a cold storage room.
Yeah.
And his breath is, like, real heavy in the air. But he has, like, this weird heavy-ass coat with tubes going to it.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like an insulated thing. which is, like, really cool. I guess, like, unless you thought about what those tubes were doing, you never would have known.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember that at all?
I remember, but I assumed that the tubes were for him to breathe normal without breathing in whatever chemicals they're using for the body.
Well, they're not on his face. They hook up to the back of the coat. It's to keep him warm.
Oh, that's what they are?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense. I never thought about it.
And, so, that was...
I thought he was wearing a mask as well. They took it off. Or maybe there was, like, glasses or something.
It was. I know he had goggles and, like, gloves and
maybe
shit.
I'm thinking about goggles. Yeah, they took off the goggles.
And, that's how... I fucked it all up. That's how, Pris knows how to find J.F. Sebastian.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Chu gives him up. He's all... He even goes through the eyes, the eye thing.
Yeah.
He's like, I made your eyes.
Yeah.
And shit like that. That's when he does the eye thing. That's kind of...
Kind of racist, yeah. Yeah. It's fine. It's nice to know racism is still around in the future with flying cars and shit.
Is it nice to know?
I'm just kidding. I'm not serious. It seems like Decker's not really doing much much blade running, I guess. Yeah, at this part of the movie.
He really, like... He's about to start getting into it. When Rachel shows up, she tries to convince him that I have memories and I have all these things that are real. She has, like, a photo of her family.
Yeah, he knows it's fucking fake, but he's not gonna say anything.
Yeah, and the idea of the photo is what makes him go and search Leon's apartment.
Yeah.
For, like, personal effects, like photos and things.
Yeah, which leads to finding a photo which he actually analyzed on a machine. He finds a, what is it, snake scales or whatever?
I think he sees Zora in the bathtub, and it makes him look in the bathtub.
Bathtub, which makes him...
Find the snake scales.
Which leads him to find her, basically.
And, does he go after Zora?
Yeah, he does. That's the first person he goes after.
So, he finds the snake scale. The snake scale has a, serial number on it.
Yeah.
Because as we've seen earlier with, Mr. Chu, you know, they synthesize, like, everything that's kind of robotic, and it has a serial number that you can track.
Yeah.
This is where we get the sort of animals are a big deal, like real animals are a big deal. And, you know, through that, he finds the dealer who sold the snake, and he finds out he sold it to Zora, one of the Nexus 6.
Yeah.
Who's a stripper and has like a dance with the snake.
With the snake, yeah.
That we never get to see.
But it sounds fucking interesting as all hell.
Because he goes and orders a drink, and then they're like, coming to the stage, Zora!
And around that time when he meets up with her, once she leaves the stage, he puts on this fake-ass Clark Kent voice. Do you remember?
Yeah, he's all like, hi, I'm with the
Does he put on glasses and he has like the Clark Kent voice going on?
I know he puts on glasses and a stupid voice. I don't know if it was a Clark Kent voice.
I call it the Clark Kent because it sounds... You have to sound like a complete doofus when you're wearing glasses. Because I guess apparently around that time period in the 80s, you know, it's early 70s, well, mid-70s, only doofuses wore glasses.
Doofus.
Yeah, I mean, did you ever see anyone in the 80s that was cool wearing glasses?
Cyclops.
Well, he had no other fucking choice. I mean, you know what happened if he took off his glasses? Mass fucking chaos.
Unless you're Mr. Sinister, but we're not talking about comic books. Why, you know what, whatever. So, Decker goes and he tracks down Zora.
Yeah.
He talks to her when they get off stage. They go backstage. You kind of get to see more of just the little things in the world. Like when she takes a shower and she dries off her hair by putting her head in that weird bubble.
Yeah.
That's like kind of an all-around hair dryer. And she pulls it out and it's like perfectly combed and shit.
Yeah, which should actually exist.
I mean, why not? I mean, that's kind of a fucking Jetsons type move, but...
Yeah.
And she puts on like a weird-ass metal bra, plastic bra thing that doesn't connect. It just kind of like hooks onto your body like a toy.
Yeah, because he comes in and she's putting on like what seems like just whatever. Like you don't understand exactly how these clothes work.
Plastic bra, see-through raincoat.
Yeah, you don't understand how any of this works, but I guess it's their style. Maybe it's their sexy style.
Maybe, I mean, she is a stripper. Who knows?
She's a stripper. Maybe it's her stripper attire in the future.
But through Deckard's stupid-ass ruse, she figures out, oh, shit, this guy's a Blade Runner. And she fucking... Doesn't she throw him around a bit?
Yeah, I think she throws him, or she does something in order for her to escape and run away. As she's running, that's when you get that chase with the siren going off.
Yeah. and he's like tracking her through the town and or the streets and shit.
Yeah.
She runs into a department store.
Yeah.
And Deckard, being the hero we all know, shoots her in the fucking back.
Yeah. A couple of times, and the bullets go through her, and you can see the squid work.
You do get some squib scenes, like you kind of see her, the blood shooting out of her back. Some of the refilming things I was talking about takes place here. The original running through the glass and falling and shit.
Yeah.
If you watch the theatrical cut, looks terrible. It's an obvious lady or an obvious like man in a wig and shit like that. And it just doesn't look right. For the final cut, Ridley Scott took the original actress who played Zora.
Yeah.
Had her kind of like run against the green screen with like her hair done up.
Wait a minute, he brought her back?
Yeah, it's a reshoot in the final cut.
I know they did they actually filmed stuff, like refilmed stuff and added more footage, but I had no idea because I never fully seen the original.
Yeah, one day I'm going to have to show you. But scene where she's running through the glass, you know, she gets shot in the back and falls through the glass.
Yeah.
And that's redone with the lady.
Yeah, but wouldn't she look different? Because it's fucking old.
They do it pretty well. It looks shitty to begin with, so maybe I'm giving it more credit than it deserves.
Yeah, so either way, it's an improvement.
Yeah.
Because seeing that scene, I never noticed there was anything different, but I guess a little bit of makeup, it should have probably looked that as old. And
well, it's also kind of like from the back and from the side, and it's not like even in the original, you didn't get a head-on shot of her face.
Yeah.
You know, so they can kind of play around with the camera work and shit. And it's against a green screen, so they kind of digitally edited it in to look a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, like later on when we see Pris doing all that acrobatic shit.
Yeah.
That was really like some gymnast dude that they filmed.
Yeah, I heard that.
So don't get too much of a boner, guys. It's really a dude.
It's a man, baby.
So Zora gets fucking shot in the back by our hero.
Yeah.
And Leon,
multiple times, by the way.
Yeah. Leon, who's going back to his apartment to get his photos, which is a big deal to him. I feel like the movie doesn't really set that up too well.
I wondered if just to get to start out there. Considering that Ridley Scott did lose someone close to him around the time of filming it, I wonder if he was phoning in an amazing fucking movie.
I don't think he was. When you hear him talk about the film and the making of the film, he sounds very passionate about it. His idea was the world we see and the neon umbrella thing.
Yeah.
And, like, he brought a lot to the book that wasn't there. That kind of, like, pyramid in the sky that the Tyrell Corporation is.
Yeah.
Not in the book. It's all him.
You know, Philip K. Dick actually did see... He never saw the movie because he died before the movie was released. But he did see some of the footage of it. And he was blown away by it. It said that it was exactly as what he imagined.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it was really cool. But unfortunately, he was never able to see the full film.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other people I wish could see their work and kind of appreciate it.
I wish we could fucking, at gunpoint, force Alan Moore to watch Watchmen.
Or V for Vendetta. It's like, these aren't that bad, dude. Get over it. You know, I'm not going to apologize for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but at least these two tried.
Well, at least knowing that it killed Sean Connery's career.
Scott Snyder even said that, he's like, worst case scenario, Alan Moore watches it one day and thinks that wasn't too shitty.
Yeah.
And I this isn't Watchmen. Maybe we'll do that one day. So Pris gets shot. Leon's going back to his apartment to get his photos and sees Cora getting shot. And he decides to attack Deckard. And that's where we get like a quick tussle between Deckard and Leon. He finally pulls out his badass gun that we only get to see a little bit.
Did he ever have a name?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm sure it's, you know,
it's probably a name. Like, we just found out the cars are called spinners. Maybe it does, in fact, have a name, but that we just don't know yet.
I'm sure it does. I mean, well, why wouldn't it? Everything else in that world has a name, believe it or not.
I think it does have a name. I remember seeing some kind of name while I was searching for the gun for my personal purchase, which I'm still going to go through with.
Shit, I'd love to have one. But, So they fight over it. You can tell that Leon's way stronger than Deckard. He, like, throws him up against the truck, and the truck bends and shit.
Yeah.
And so he's wrestling him. He's choking the shit out of him. He slaps the gun out of Deckard's hand. And then Rachel comes along out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Picks it up, shoots Leon. So Deckard has raped a woman, shot another woman in the back, and can't even kill this other replicant to save his life. our hero, ladies and gentlemen.
But at the same time, people listening to this already figured out what things we said before. That they're leaning towards that there may be a little something special about Deckard to begin with, that he may in fact be a replicant. However, he's getting tossed around by another replicant. And it kind of makes you question if he really is one, or if he really is just a human, or if he's a replicant made to be just like a human, considering the fact they're making replicants now that can't tell that they are replicants.
Yeah, they're implanted with false memories and shit, an entire false life that they've heard
so
of.
Yeah, so the fact he's getting smacked around, it just raises so many questions.
I believe in the book, they try to hint that Rachel is implanted with the memories of, like, Tyrell's daughter or something like that. Somebody that Tyrell knew. And that all of her memories is that other person's memories.
Did they do that with the movie? I have a feeling they did that with the movie.
I might have been thinking of the movie, but I know it's in there somewhere.
I have a feeling. I could totally be wrong. I could totally be thinking of another film. What, Resident Evil, the first one?
Jesus.
Where they made the computer is based upon the creator's daughter.
Yeah.
I'm not saying. I'm throwing out names. I'm going to say it could have been any other movie. That's all I'm saying.
You can't see the disappointing look on
that. I said it could have been any other movie I got it mixed up with. But I do think that it was, in fact, someone's daughter, like the creator's daughter, that she's based upon.
I also want to say we're not working off any notes or anything. So I think some of the timeline of the movie might be out of whack.
Yeah.
I feel like this is when he probably fucking bangs her. This is when Deckard nails... This is when Deckard nails Rachel to the floor. And
maybe they're just slightly making love a little bit. But they're making love a slightly forced, I guess.
I mean, we do finally see Sean Young, Rachel's hair finally mess up. Because she's had all kinds of weird-ass fucking hairstyles.
Yeah.
And they, like, let it down. It's like, oh, I guess it's supposed to be real hair. For the longest time, I thought it was just...
like a wig or something?
Like, something... because she's a robot. Like, why wouldn't it just be something? Like, yeah. It's weird to think that she had to do her hair. But we saw Cora having to wash and dry her hair, so maybe it wasn't that weird.
Yeah, it's probably not that weird. Plus, she doesn't know. She's unaware that she would have to. Like, that she could just not give a shit, I guess.
And, this is about the time when Roy Batty shows up to J.F. Sebastian's house.
Yeah.
To tell Pris that the others have died.
Yeah.
That the other two that they were with, not the other two had died earlier, but the other two, Cora and Leon, are dead. And that they need to find Tyrell now. And Deckard is after them. So they talk to J.F. Sebastian. He kind of like finally is all like, sure, I'll take Roy to go see Tyrell.
Yeah.
And Pris stays behind to, you know, fight Deckard in case he shows up. Do you remember... I mean, I'm going to go to the Tyrell scene, but do you remember how Deckard knows to go to J.F. Sebastian's house?
I can remember. I cannot remember.
Yeah, neither can I.
Probably like just like just being kind of sort of a detective, I guess. Blade Runners are sort of detectives.
Yeah, but we never really see him do any detecting work.
Yes. Well, I guess like context clues, you figure that they're trying to find a way in, and probably that's their way in.
I mean, he knows they're trying to expand their life, I think, by now.
Yeah, so he goes, so he figured it out, so it's probably just, you know, does it take Batman, the world's greatest detective, to figure out, so probably go to where they're, to the people who help manufacture them.
It doesn't take the Dark Knight detective to figure this one out?
Yeah. Man. I imagine just being miserable in the fucking rain.
Like
his cape just like soaked, but anyway, yeah.
Standing on a gargoyle like at the end of the movie. Man, one thing I love that Ra's al Ghul does that they never did in the movies was called Batman Detective.
Yeah,
which I wish they would have done, but they never did.
Well, he never was a detective. By the time he did come on, he was already fucking dead.
Yeah, he was dead. And and Batman was a wanted man.
Yeah, but, wanted man.
So, Tyrell, so J.F. Sebastian takes Roy Batty to go see Tyrell.
Yeah.
They go up there, they talk. He tells them that, you know, there's nothing, we've tried over and over to extend the lives of the replicants, and it's just not possible.
Yeah. And it hits you with the brightest star always burns the fastest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he said?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Brightest star burns the most or some shit.
The bright star always burns the fastest.
Yeah.
And Wright Batty's not trying to fucking hear that shit.
So he grabs him and fucking like...
pushes his eyes in and he either says, I want life, father, or I want life, fucker.
Yeah, the final cut, he says, I want life, father. The theatrical cut says, I want life, fucker.
Yeah.
An interesting side note was that... what's his name? Roy Batty was going to pull out his eyes.
Yeah.
And we were going to see that it was had a serial number on it. And that Tyrell himself was a replicant of the real Tyrell, who was like in kind of a stasis.
Yeah.
And he kept cloning his body every 3 years, so he'll be like permanent head of the Tyrell Corporation forever.
Wow.
And they have the like storyboards. Ridley Scott talks about how he was going to film it, but he couldn't find a good reason for why the eye would fall and zoom in on the eye and shit.
Yeah.
So even Tyrell was going to be a replicant in the end.
Yeah.
So
I never knew that.
Really?
I never knew.
So Deckard shows up to J.F. Sebastian's house. Yeah. Whatever happens to J.F. Sebastian? Doesn't he just disappear?
No one to leave him there. The Tyrell Corporation with Tyrell dead. Yeah. And you're like, well, bye. Basically, they leave him there.
Yeah, Roy Batty's pretty much reserved himself to his fate that I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I can do. So Deckard shows up at J.F. Sebastian's house.
Yeah.
And Pris is waiting for him. She kind of does this weird gymnastics, like flipping around thing.
Yeah.
To fight him, I guess?
Well, she does it, then she lands on top of him.
And she tries to do like a fucking Xena on top, James Bond, GoldenEye, break his neck with her thighs move.
Yeah. And then like, after a while, she tries it again when she has him down, which she never did. You know, just kick him, while he's down. You know, just kick him while he's down.
She did kick him when he was down, remember? But
don't do, you know, she had him down and she did a bunch of fucking flips. She
flipped away and he fucking shot her.
And while she was trying to stick it, he blew her away.
Once again, our hero shot a woman in the back.
While she's doing flips.
Raped another woman, then shot another woman in mid-flip.
Well, Dick is a terrible guy.
I mean, I'm making it seem a lot worse than
It's not as bad as what it is, but you actually analyze
I'm playing it up for comedy, people.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't him just being a dick, you know. It's not Dicker walking around in the rain wearing a hat that says swag.
Yeah.
And just being a douche.
And so he kills Pris. Pris was sort of pretending to be a toy amongst all of J.F. Sebastian's like toys and robotic things that he had going on.
Yeah.
Roy Batty is also, he's shown back up by then, because he's in that apartment. Remember he does the fucking RoboCop punch through the wall move?
Yeah, he shows up, and at that time when he finally shows up, she's already dead.
Yeah.
So,
she does that weird flopping around thing after she got shot.
Which is amazing, because like, it's all like strobe-like.
Yeah.
Like, he's flopping fist. But when she dies, and he sees her, you know, he's... starts crying, he gets very emotional.
He fucking loses his shit, takes off his shirt.
That scene was fucking terrifying for me.
What happened? Where you're like, oh fuck, this robot's gonna mess him up.
Yeah, it was terrifying for me, because it went from him being very, I guess,
calculated.
Intelligent and articulate and calculated to him just being fucking crazy as all shit. And it made me a fan of the actor to this very day.
Rutger Hauer?
Yeah, even...
The hobo with a shotgun?
Yeah, even... Well, I found out he played the hobo with a shotgun. I'm like, that's the perfect actor to fucking play that character.
So, Deckard and Roy Batty get into a fight that kind of goes around the apartment. There's punching through walls. Doesn't Deckard get his hand messed up?
Yeah, he punched through a wall and grabs Deckard's arm.
I know he knocks the gun away from him, so he doesn't have the gun in the
air. Well, he lets him shoot a couple of times before he breaks his fingers.
Yeah.
And then lets him go. Like, freaking, like, chest him down while he's running around in his underwear.
Yeah, he's just...
howling like a fucking wolf.
He's really just fucking with him in this fight. Like, he could kill him at any time. Is he painted
with, like, dirt on his face or blood or something?
I don't think so.
I think he paints his face with her blood.
Does he? I don't remember that.
Yeah, he puts like, blood on his face from her and runs around in his underwear screaming fucking bloody murder.
Literally howling at the moon.
Howling at the moon.
They jump across to another apartment building. They end up on the roof.
Well, when, Deckard jumps, he doesn't really quite make it, and then Roy he
catches one hand onto a ledge.
Yeah, then Roy being a dick just jumps over effortlessly and lands, and like, you know, pulls him up.
Yeah, by one hand.
You think he's going to kill him, but he actually pulls him up and lets him live. And it goes to his famous speech.
Yeah, I've seen things.
Yeah.
Apparently, Rutger Hauer wrote all that himself.
I had no idea.
Like, it wasn't in the movie. He just had, I want to do this thing with this dove.
Yeah.
And that was all his idea. And it's pretty good. I mean, that whole, all this will wash away like tears in the rain move. Pretty good. Pretty good, Rutger Hauer.
Yeah. It was so much feel in that scene. It was so much feel.
Where you're like, good for you.
I wonder if, like I said, Ridley Scott had a death in his family around that time. And this movie helped him deal with it. And you can see the ways I feel like this guy should help someone deal with death. Or someone very close to him. So I wonder if that scene was actually done to kind of represent that.
I mean, maybe. I think it's supposed to be a poignant thing about, okay, I'll get into, because after Roy Batty dies.
Yeah.
And the movie, the theatrical version of the movie ends there.
Yeah.
With Harrison Ford coming in with the voiceover that I hardly talked about in the movie.
And they're driving away, right?
Yeah, he takes Rachel. I don't know if they're driving away. The
drive away is like some kind of open
field. Forest shit.
From what I hear, they did another movie together. Harrison Ford and the actress. Mm-hmm. And what they did was, the other movie they did, it was like a movie they were filming after Blade Runner or something, or something they did around that time period. And they took the ending to that, or a scene for that, and added into Blade Runner in the editing.
I heard that scene was taken from The Shining or something. It's not even them.
Yeah,
it's just a different movie altogether.
Yeah, that's right here. It's a completely different movie that they're in. Either they're in the movie together, or it's a totally different scene. With the car driving, they just kind of put them in there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Made the film a scene in the car together or something. But whatever the situation is, it was a film by Ridley Scott.
And Harrison Ford comes in with his shitty voiceover that he did shitty on purpose.
Yeah.
Of, he was looking for what we were all looking for. Life. It's awful.
I seen a little bit of it, but
you can find all the clips on YouTube.
Well, I had the movie, so I might as well just watch the whole movie.
Yeah, but the people listening might not have all seven movies.
Oh, you mean for everyone listening, you always find the clips on YouTube. But not really all that necessary. Watch the final cut.
Yeah, I would go final cut.
Yeah.
So the Nexus 6 are dead. Tyrell's dead.
Yeah.
He's done his job. He can retire as a Blade Runner.
Yeah.
He goes home.
Oh, wait. Remember? Too bad she won't live?
That's where I'm getting to.
Yeah, okay.
And he goes home to get Rachel, because now that Tyrell's dead, they're looking for her as one of the, missing robots.
Yeah.
Missing replicants. And he gets her. He's like, we gotta go. We gotta fucking get out of here, because he knows Gaff and them are looking for her.
Yeah.
And this is all only in the final cut, but he, hears a knock at the door, I believe. And that's, or he sees Gaff. He knows that they're there.
No, what happens is, once Roy Batty dies, Gaff is there already. He just shows up somehow at the very end on the roof with him. And he looks over to him, and he's like, hold on, brother, in the rain. And he's like, too bad she won't live.
But no, he doesn't.
Get who does? That's in the final cut that happens.
Does he say it there, though?
Yeah, he says it there. Too bad she won't live, and then again, who does? And then Decker leaves, goes back to his apartment, and the first thing you see is him coming to her, sees the little unicorn, right?
Yeah.
I'm a guy named Unicorn. He just grabs her and leaves. The movie ends with them closing the door. And you have no idea what the next step is or where they're going.
Well, okay, I remember in the final cut, he has the gun out. He's checking corners and he's leaving. Because he knows they were there to find her.
Yeah.
When they leave to leave the building, he finds the origami unicorn. And then you hear Gaff say again, it's too bad she won't live through the night. But then again, who does?
Yeah, because they replay it.
Yeah.
At the scene.
And then they drive away and shit. sort of giving you the idea that, like, maybe Gaff... Like, Gaff knows that he's supposed to be hunting down Rachel, and, like, maybe he is gonna let them be happy till she dies, or...
Yeah. It doesn't really make it clear. In the final cut, it's not really clear, like, exactly what they're gonna do. But, you know, at the very end, Deckard goes home and leaves with her. The final scene is them closing the door, and he's completely up in the air what happens. But also, the unicorn symbolizes that Gaff knew what his dreams were about.
Yeah, but that's all Final Cut stuff.
Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the Final Cut.
Yeah, well, I just want to clarify that the unicorn stuff is all Final Cut.
Yeah, so it kind of tells that, you know, he knew what his dreams were about. It kind of leads to the idea, is Deckard a replicant or not? Is he a replicant that was possibly designed to kill other replicants? Or is he a replicant on his final year, maybe, of lifespan and doesn't know it? And that's the reason why they felt the need to use him, because he's expendable.
I mean, I don't... If you ask... They ask Tony Scott and a few other people in the documentary that they have on the DVD or Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Tony Scott says he's absolutely a replicant.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford says he's not.
Yeah. And you know, to this very day, they still disagree with it.
One of the writers says he's not, because that would take away the humanity of the character.
Yeah.
And one of the producers says, of course he is, because, you know, how could he make that jump, and how could he do all these other things? So, like, even amongst the people who made the film, it's sort of a, who knows?
Yeah, I think that was intentional, though. He wanted to be discussed. That was his original ending. He wanted for it to be discussed, that what you don't know what happened and what the issue is. If they make a sequel, which you actually do go to the sequel, which they said they have Harrison Ford on board for it. They have actually said whether he's going to reprise his role, and we find out that he's a human, or he could be a totally different character.
I don't know. Like, thinking about the movie, I would like them to kind of flesh out the world a bit more, because the things I know about the movie are things I know from, you know, reading about it, watching documentaries, reading the book.
The Blade Runner video game is pretty cool. And the Blade Runner video game takes place in the same world, and it kind of plays along with the world as well. I feel like there's so many stories that can be told within that world that doesn't have to do anything with Deckard.
Yeah, I mean, you could follow Gaff around. Gaff is a regular ass dude.
Yeah.
So if you take Edward James Olmos now, he would be that age.
Yeah.
So maybe Gaff's training somebody, maybe he's... You know, and who the hell knows what the world is going to be like, you know, some 30 years later.
Yeah, things could have changed. Could have changed for the better. Could have changed for the worse. You could bring in a new... You could see, like, a new Blade Runner who barely get into. Or Blade Runners are no longer used.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we're all replicants. Maybe there's no more replicants at all.
Yeah.
You know, and they also say that, like, people who live on Earth are kind of the poor people.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the, like, kind of, you know, more of the, you send all your workers off to a different planet.
Yeah.
You know, Earth is kind of for the people who can't afford to get off planet.
Yeah.
So, that could lead to something. Also, like, a funny note, Blade Runner, not the name of the book, you know, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yeah.
Blade Runner was taken from a different movie that they were trying to make, where it was, you would smuggle, doctor's tools and shit.
Yeah.
So a Blade Runner was somebody who would, like, smuggle scalpels and shit.
Yeah, right here, it had nothing to do with what the final product was. They just changed the name for whatever reason. But I would love for them to make a sequel and name it, kind of working in Electric Sheep, like, just simply titled Blade Runner Electric Sheep or something. I would love for them to bring in more elements of the book that they didn't have a chance to touch on.
Like
they've also made sequels. Like, there's also a writer who has made sequels to the Philip K. Dick's books. But even though they follow the books he's brought in, he was able to blend in the movie and the books to make one coherent story. So it's plenty of things you could do with the franchise in the future. And I would love to see. I feel like it's so great of a film with such a big world that we haven't had a chance to expand and explore yet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I did it justice trying to walk you through the movie. A lot of it does have to be seen to be believed. And yeah. Although, like, I don't know who would like it. Like I've said before, I've shown people the movie, And they were like, well, if I wasn't watching it with you explaining things, I wouldn't have gotten it at all, or I wouldn't have liked it very much.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe I would say watch it no matter what. But I guess you kind of have to go into it with an open mind.
Yeah. I mean, it really is an amazing film. And it does make you, at times, it does beat you over the head with the concept of how valuable life is. And before I got, the message I got from Roy Batty's speech at the end, it doesn't just apply to replicants, it applies to people. Everything you learn, everything you become, your lifetime is completely lost where you're going.
Yeah, I mean, there's other, like, Buddhists and things like that believe in living for now.
Yeah.
Like, you only get one life. And if you're so worried about what's going to happen afterwards, you're never going to spend it enjoying the one you currently have.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to get all fucking, you know, philosophical and shit.
But, yeah, it's an amazing film. I truly, truly love this film. I discovered it late in life. I actually discovered this after Star Wars. And, but it is one of the films that, after going back and seeing some of the films I missed out on, like very sci-fi-ish, nerdy films, It is one that's really close to my heart. That's all time we have for this episode. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Also check us out on iTunes. Subscribe to us. Now let us know how you feel, what's going on, what you want us to do next, what you want us to review next, and give us a little bit of input. And we bid you a good day.